oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is TFG1 Mike with the Geekcast Radio Network and TuneCast. Unfortunately, we are still having audio issues. I figured out that the sound emoticon player that plays with the Pamela call recorder is only echoing when we record. It's not echoing when we're not recording, which makes absolutely no fucking sense. So I'm going to send these people an email. Hopefully by Friday, I will have the newer version of Pamela Pro bought if I have enough money left over, so please enjoy TuneCast Episode 9, Dexter's Lab. Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of TuneCast, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFG1 Mike, and as usual, I'm joined by Kevin, Professor Boss K Dog. Hello.
How's it going?
It's going. How are you?
I am good.
Today we will be discussing Dexter's Laboratory, or often abbreviated as Dexter's Lab. I will fully admit that even though I've watched this show because it was part of Cartoon Network's, you know, original run, part of their heyday, I will fully admit that this show is filler, only because I needed something so simple this week so I could start on next week's huge-ass project.
Yeah, you can pretty much predict that a lot of times our 9th or, let's say, 19th or the show before a big number is usually not going to be the greatest thing in the world.
I mean, I'm sorry to cut you off, but Dexter's Lab does have good qualities about it. I'm not saying it's a bad show, but it's not something I watched often. It was in that phase of mine where, you know, something is so popular that everybody's doing it, I do the exact fucking opposite thing.
Understandable.
So, what have you been up to this week?
Pretty busy week, actually. I finished both online master's courses that I was taking. They both ended this last week, so that's one less thing I have to worry about now, so that's good. I went to a concert yesterday, went to a Coldplay concert, just because one of the people that I hang out with, it was their birthday and they wanted me to go, so I'm not a big concert person, but went to it anyway. And the biggest news for me is I bought a house, so I'm going to be a first-time homeowner, hopefully get to move in by the end of August.
I've been watching House Hunters every day this week. Mm-hmm. I'd see you on there.
I actually just got into that show because it's basically the exact same process I went through for the last couple months, and I had never watched it before. All of a sudden, I was interested in it. But yeah, that's not a bad show.
If I ever get enough money, even if it's down payment or if I actually get a job that actually pays me, mm-hmm. You know, I know more about buying a house or even renting a house or finding a rental than any
right.
that I know personally, because I watch those shows are very, very informative.
Oh, it's very educational. The only bad part about it so far is it seems like I haven't seen all the episodes, obviously, but the ones I seem to catch are always people buying houses that are like ridiculously more money than I could ever even think about buying.
If you want to find like a first-time home buyers type of deal, watch Property Virgins with Sandra. How do you say her last name? I think it's Rinamano.
Uh-huh.
She goes and helps people where their budgets are extremely low, like anywhere from $70,000 to $300,000-$400,000 houses.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't mean to say that that's a low number. To all the other homes, like $500,000, $1 million, $2 million, crap like that.
Yeah,
you know, it's the lower end of the budget scale.
Right.
This week for me, this past week and a half, two weeks has been extremely busy. This past week and a half, Geekcast Radio has seen 14 releases.
And you've been on at least 13 of them, right?
Actually 15 now, because Steve did another headshot last night. But yeah, pretty much on all of them. We had 3 episodes of Transformers Toy Cast. We had, which you actually were on one of those.
I forgot, yeah. This is actually going to be about the fourth podcast I've done this last week, so.
we had 3 Toy Casts. We had between last Friday, not this past Friday that just passed, but the week before, we had the final 3 episodes of TFG1 Podcast. My first podcasting adventure is now over. Oh, thank God. That show is so hard to produce. And only because of all the individual clips and stuff that I use, because I wanted people to, you know, remember the show by hearing the audio from the show if they didn't have the DVDs. Let's see what else. We had 2 All Things Transformers, episode 29, and I did a special SDCC conversation, which I'm actually going to be doing another one of those because of the fact that after we did that conversation, they had the Transformers panel, and they announced all these other figures. Like the Transformers animated figures, Rodimus Minor, RC, all that stuff. I don't think they announced when they were going to come out, but I've heard rumors that there is a Walmart pre-order listing somewhere, so hopefully soon, because I want those. I want that Rodimus figure. That figure looks so fucking awesome. What else did we have? We had Movie Week in Review Episode 2, which was actually released late. And then yesterday we released Episode 3. Episode 2 is the Naked Gun films. Episode 3, which had to be rearranged, actually was Big Fat Liar, because Mike the Birdman Dodd ended up catching the flu this past week and couldn't record with us. So a speedy recovery to Mike. I think we're actually going to be recording the Die Hard stuff next Thursday. It's just podcasting and trying to find a real job, which isn't helping considering the majority of them you have to stand up 8 hours a day, and I'm too old and fat for that.
And honest. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, honesty, they can either fast forward this or they don't have to listen.
Right.
So yeah, that's pretty much all that's going on with me. Haven't really gotten anything new as far as DVD releases or anything like that. Obviously because of lack of money, but there's...
Oh, I did forget one other thing I did is had a G.I. Joe marathon one day with one of my friends. Finally busted out that collection, and we watched almost all the special features, and we watched the first 10 episodes. So that's what I spent one day doing.
Very, very cool. Don't you dare mention that other set or else.
I haven't, and I won't.
Yeah, good.
I'll give you enough opportunities to hit that button.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we are going to move into today's show topic. All right, it is time for the history lesson, and hopefully the professor is prepared this week.
Actually, for the history lesson, being the professor here, I have a big collection of books on cartoons, cartoon histories, encyclopedias, etc. So for the history lesson today, we're actually going to use a primary source here. I'm going to the Encyclopedia of Animated Cartoons, which is a humongous book by Jeff Lindberg, which covers cartoon shorts, movies, series, and etc. It actually has a picture of Dexter on the cover. Alvin and the Chipmunks, Dexter, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Simpsons, and a couple others. And I'm just actually going to read Jeff Lindberg's entry for Dexter's Laboratory. And this is how he puts it. Squat, spectacled, neurotic kid genius with a poof of bright red hair creates fantastic inventions in his huge bedroom laboratory despite the pesky intolerance of his ditzy big sister, Dee Dee, in this computer-generated animated half-hour series produced exclusively for the Cartoon Network. The character was the first breakout star of Hanna-Barbera's world premiere Toon series, which had premiered a year earlier on the Cartoon Network, featuring the cartoon short Dexter, produced by then 26-year-old Russian-born filmmaker, I don't know if I'm going to say this right, but Genndy Tartakovsky. Yeah. The film won Tartakovsky both an Emmy nomination in 1995 and again in 1996 for the series, and a contract from the network to develop Dexter into a series. Starring in 39 all-new half hours, each program includes two Dexter laboratory shorts and a third related segment, either Dial M for Monkey, about a superpowered crime-fighting primate who sets out to save the world when Dexter isn't looking, or Justice Friends, which follows a group of superheroes challenged more by the problems of living together than the evil forces that threaten the world. Like we said, it was a Cartoon Network production, aired in color, half-hour installments, and it premiered on Cartoon Network April 28th, 1996. So let's move on to the rest of the episode. This has been The Professor, and thanks to Jeff Lundberg for that history lesson.
All right, it is time for the general memories, recollections segment. This show for me, as I said to you off air, it was one of those things where it was a giant fad back in the mid-90s. It was after Animaniacs and all the really good cartoons. And back then, I was like, you know, I was 16. I was more into like Beast Wars and all that stuff than, you know, than this. And it was one of those fads where I tend to shy away from crap. Well, take Seinfeld, for example. Look how big that was. I didn't actually start really liking that show until probably about a year and a half ago.
I'm actually exactly the same way. Seinfeld's a good example for me too. I never watched it when it was current live or new episodes. I mean, same thing with like when Titanic came out and everybody was going gaga over that movie. I am proud to say I never saw that in the theater, so I understand completely what you're saying.
Unfortunately, I had to sit in the theater for 3 fucking hours for a girl who actually ended up dumping me before high school ended. So yeah, oh well.
Right. It happens.
Yeah, it happens. But this was, I do have to give this show props. I mean, I do watch it now, either at 9 o'clock at night or 3 o'clock in the morning on Boomerang. This was, along with Powerpuff Girls, this was Cartoon Network's one of their, you know, two of, you know, both those shows were two of their biggest hits when they first started. You know, when Cartoon Network first started. And this is part of their heyday. And I know it's only been, what, 12 or 13 years since Cartoon Network started, but I mean, still. That's still a long time, especially where they are today with CN Real. And I'm not even, that's a rant for another episode. That's for my ranting show that I'm going to end up coming up with. But this episode does have its comedic moments, mostly with sometimes with Dexter and his dad or Dexter and his mom. I didn't really so much laugh at the Dee Dee stuff. I don't know. It was just kind of weird for me.
I just have to be brutally honest. I have absolutely no general memories or recollections of the show.
You have never watched it.
I did not ever watch it. This is, like you said, it was 1996 or so, and after about 1992 or 93, cartoons to me were dead, because there was just utter crap being produced after the 80s and the first couple years of the 90s. So this was in like a void of cartoons that existed in history, and so for me it didn't really exist, so I don't have any recollection of it, watching it, because I never did. How's that for honesty?
Can't believe what you just said. Beast Wars fans, unite and kill him.
No, there was a couple exceptions. I mean, even Animaniacs and Tiny Toons were a little bit somewhat in that range, even though they were kind of at the end of the golden era there. Yep. But there was very rare, or very few cartoons in the mid to late 90s or beyond that were worth just about anything, in my opinion.
I mean, I agree. But, you know, since, well, I wouldn't say I've really grown up since then, but I mean, you know.
We neither of us have, obviously.
I'd still kind of appreciate this cartoon now. You know, it's one of those things where you have to appreciate it after its popularity is gone, pretty much, as far as what I think. So, yeah. All right, it is time for the characters and voice actors segment. There were a lot of characters in this show. For a show that ran only, what, 4, 5 years? There's a lot of characters. The main protagonist is Dexter. He's basically a boy genius who invents strange chemicals, robots, many of whom eventually band together and turn on him, rockets and giant fighting robot reminiscent of machines of the Gundam anime, which he pilots and uses to fight his arch nemesis Mandark, who owns a similar machine. Most of his notable inventions are destroyed by his sister Dee Dee, whose favorite pastime is playing with his inventions. His birthday is unknown, although it was revealed in the episode A Hard Day's Day that Dexter is a Capricorn. Despite being American and both his parents speaking normal English, Dexter speaks with a West or South Slavic accent. I'm not really going to hit on the appearance of the personality, just because everybody that probably will listen to this show or will listen to this episode will probably know who and what Dexter is and what he looks like. unlike some people that follow this podcast. But, you know, Dexter was... he had his funny moments, but I don't think he was the most funny out of the characters. And I do have one thing from... actually, I do have a couple things from Dexter, but here's one of them. Yeah, Dexter was super, super cool. You want to take Dee Dee?
Yeah, sure. Dee Dee is Dexter's extremely ditzy, naive, simple-minded older sister. She loves ballet, dolls, ponies, unicorns, and most of all, it seems, messing around in Dexter's laboratory, like we mentioned. Generally depicts all the stereotypes concerning young girls. She's quite similar to the Powerpuff Girls character Bubbles, both in appearance and personality. She is 2 to 3 times taller than Dexter and has peculiar body proportions. Minuscule torso with a large head and gangly limbs similar to a ballerina's, which is she was originally actually supposed to be the star of the show, and it was supposed to be a wannabe ballerina, until as he was developing the show, Tartakovsky created the Dexter character, who then kind of took over the show. So she was actually supposed to be this wannabe ballerina star of the show originally. To complete that ballet look, she wears a small pink tutu and ballet shoes, which usually create a squishy noise while walking. Dexter once compared her to a stick and subsequently threw her to entertain a dog. She occasionally reveals the deep depth of hidden knowledge, being able to beat Dexter on a test and therefore driving him insane, and once functioned as a guru for Dexter, teaching him the way of the Dee Dee. Although she seems to be extremely moronic, her social skills far exceed Dexter's, as she is quite popular at their local school, while he is shunned except for his other equally geeky associates. Her best friends in the series are Mimi and Lily, two girls that share her interest, even though they are noticeably different in appearance. Her catchphrase is, what does this button do?
What does this button do?
Gotcha, good. She wears her full length of hair down on rare occasions, mostly when sleeping. She also has a multitude of stuffed animals, and she has a 4-poster bed. I think that's good enough for Dee Dee.
Dee Dee was very, very annoying. And I'm the only child, and I found Dee Dee super annoying. I only have one clip from her, and this is it. I could not find the what does this button do clip on YouTube, so on to Mandark. Whose real name is Susan. I'm not even gonna pronounce the last name. I don't even know.
Astronomanoi.
Bother embarrassing myself trying.
Susan Astronomanoi.
Whose parents are Windbear, who's the father, and Oceanbird, who is the mother.
Lalavava Ogle.
Dexter's arch nemesis, approximately equal in intelligence to Dexter. He too possesses his own laboratory, which has a very red and black color scheme and may be organic based. In his original appearance, his technology and knowledge far exceeded even Dexter's, and he ordered Dexter to shut his lab down since it was taking away valuable power from Mandark's lab. However, after Dexter tricked Dee Dee into destroying Mandark's lab, he has been forced to be playing catch-up with Dexter, being eternally one step behind his rival. Despite her role in the setbacks, Mandark has a crush on Dee Dee, who initially resented the attention, but developed an easier relationship with him in the later series. He was really referred to as, possibly his last name, through his true name was revealed to be Susan, a reference to a boy named Sue. After becoming a recurring character in one episode called Dee Dee's Rival, it is revealed that he has a sister named Olga, also called Love, whatever. These fucking weird-ass names. Who seems to have total control over him, although she hasn't been seen or heard from since. Though during his first appearance, Dexter is thought to have seen Mandark for the first time. It is revealed in one episode that Mandark first met Dexter when Dexter was making fun of the former's real name. And this encounter triggered Mandark's hatred of Dexter. Mandark, the best thing about him is his laugh. It is just so weird and just out there. Unfortunately, I didn't get it. I wanted to, and I just completely forgot to look up the link. I forgot to go up in our Skype conversation and get the link to the video. But oh well, I do have several things from Mandark. It's just one or two or three of them. I'm trying to think where. Let's just play.
I better see what the dorks are wanting.
And then there's this one.
Dorks in your wine. Dreams, you freaky little gnome. In your dreams.
Nice.
You can go ahead and take the mom.
Dexter and Dee Dee's red-haired mother, mysophobe with OCD, who has trouble being around the rest of the family without her rubber gloves. She's rarely seen without her gloves and starts to go insane. She starts having nightmarish hallucinations featuring giant bugs and germs in an episode when they have gone missing from her nightstand. Although a stereotypical housewife, a few episodes imply most of Dexter's personality comes from her, including their perfectionist streaks. She speaks in a kind of Minnesotan accent. It is revealed in a flashback episode that she used to be a Valley Girl type in the 1980s, which may also be the basis for her accent. She is always seen walking on her tiptoes, and her feet make a very dainty clicking sound whenever she walks around. Her real name has never been revealed, and her husband only refers to her as Honey or Dear or stuff like that.
And then Dexter's dad, he's a stereotypical husband and heads off to the household, falling directly above his wife in authority, loves bowling, golf, fishing, and has an unnatural affinity for his wife's muffins, of which she can expertly create. According to him, the muffins are the reason he married Mom. Although this may have been a spur-of-the-moment remark since he desperately wanted the muffins at the time. Dee Dee gets most of her traits from Dad, although Dexter has inherited his need for glasses from him as well. In order to impress Dexter's classmates during Bring Your Dad to Work to School Day, he revealed that his career was that of an evil Knievel-esque motorcycle stuntman. Like his wife, his real name has not been revealed, and he is referred to as Dear, Honey, etc. Once tried to get his son to sports by episode's end, it didn't work. He was once seen smoking a pipe in one episode. While his intelligence is far below that of Dexter's, he sometimes gives good advice, such as advising Dexter to get his glasses fixed after they were regarded as cool when they were broken. Dexter's dad rides a motorcycle. Dexter's father normally tends to show favoritism to Dee Dee for athletic prowess, but will occasionally side with Dexter when facing a challenge between the sexes, such as the snowball war between Dee Dee and Dexter, which he treats as a life-and-death matter, in which Dexter must avenge his father being hit with a snowball thrown by Dexter's mother back in college. Dad is also depicted as unreasonably hostile towards Dexter when he interferes with sports-related activities, such as watching the biggest golf match of the year or breaking his bowling trophy. In the episode Better Off Wet, as shown, is he also sort of a bully, constantly pushing Dexter into the family swimming pool. Though this was an attempt to get Dexter to swim rather than being done out of pure malice, but he does go overboard and knocks Mom and Dee Dee into the pool as well, until Dexter ended it by pushing Dad in himself, which he wasn't looking, but shows good sportsmanship, when he just laughs and cheerfully tells Dexter, "You got me." That is the episode that I remember the most, the whole thing with trying to get Dexter in the pool. That was a really, really funny episode. The only other characters I'm really going to mention is the computer, and then the Justice Friends, the computer, the Quadriplex T-3000 computer, Dexter's computer that oversees the running of the lab and has personality of its own. Dexter refers to his computer as my love or my dear, given that the computer's voice and personality is female. In the episode VoiceOver, a malfunction causes the computer to express a different voice each time Dexter attempts to fix it, such as announcer voice, a sexier version of her normal voice, and a game show voice. Dexter cannot cope with this and eventually gives gives her laryngitis or whatever. Anyway, I do have the computer. Where is it? Here it is.
You freaky little gnome. My sensors have picked up a giant meteor.
Which is always really, really cool. And then, do you want to take the monkey and the Justice Friend stuff?
Yeah, just to mention that we did have the Mr. Luzinski, which is the teacher. Then we have the monkey, Dexter's caged monkey, which secretly has superpowers unbeknownst to Dexter, who often tries to give him powers via unusual experimentation. He stars in the backup Dial M for Monkey cartoons. Monkey has the ability to fly, use super strength, and shoot lasers, which is always fun. Working for a secret global agency, Monkey protects the world from intergalactic villains, large monsters, and natural disasters. He also has his own arch nemesis, a duck called Quackor, who is owned by Dexter's arch nemesis, Mandark. He is often paired with his sidekick and girlfriend, Agent Honeydew, on his missions, and his personality is similar to Dee Dee's, and he is often playing with her in the laboratory. We already mentioned Windbear and Oceanbird as Mandark's hippie parents, and then we have the collection of Justice Friends. The Justice Friends are a trio of superheroes as they face the challenges of everyday life in their apartment at Muscular Arms apartment. The trio consists of Major Glory, which was a parody on Captain America and Superman, is similar to Lord Bravery on Freakazoid. He is very patriotic and righteous and wears a seemingly infinite number of masks underneath other masks.
Yes, and
but he
is said, I'm sorry to cut
cats.
You off there. It should be said about Major Glory. The only reason why that he's even, we're even going to talk to him today is because of that Rob Paulsen fanboy over there. Rob Paulsen voiced Major Glory.
Second of the Justice Friends, I don't know if I'm going to say this
Val
right,
Holland.
But Valhallen is a god of rock and roll who owns a magical electric guitar called the Axe. And he is a loose parody of the comic book hero Thor. His name is a combination of, obviously, metal artist Eddie Van Halen and Valhalla. And then the third member of the Justice Friends is the Infraggable Krunk, which is a parody of the Incredible Hulk. He is a purple, slow-witted, but very strong hero. His skin and pants colors are the reverse of the Incredible Hulk's, and Krunk is allergic to dogs, and he has a crush on She-Thing.
Yeah, Krunk was probably the funniest out of the three of those. There are so many other characters in this show that that were listed that just aren't worth... I mean, they're worth mentioning, but it would just take us too long to mention them all. Getting into the voice actors, Christine Cavanaugh voiced Dexter. She was Mona in Salute Your Shorts. She retired in 2001. And then Candy Milo took over as Dexter.
They actually did that, I believe, twice. I think Cavanaugh was the first year... And then Milo took the second one. Cavanaugh came back, did the third year, then retired, and then Milo did it after that.
Oh, yes.
So they went back and forth a couple
Alice
times.
Alice Moore did Dee Dee for the first... her only credited work is for the show. And then Catherine Crescidia, I hope I'm saying... She took over Dee Dee from the second season to the third. She quit then before the third season was produced, and then came back again in the show's fourth and final season. Voice matches for several of the Hollywood's leading ladies for everything from films to Disney parades to records, toys, CD-ROM games. Some of her more recent matches include Kim Basinger, John Cusack, Claire Danes, and Nicole Kidman. Eddie Dezin, Mandark. He was also the voice of Pop in the Kellogg's Rice Krispies commercial. And then Kath, you say that, I don't know how to say it.
Cass Susie,
yeah.
I believe.
Mom.
I could be wrong. if I said that wrong, we've said it wrong every time we've mentioned her because she's been
in a lot
about
of stuff.
Three of our shows so far.
She played the computer, the Agent Honeydew, Ocean Bird, and Lily. She's best known for being Phil and Lil in Rugrats. Oh my God. God, my eyes are burning now that I've read that. Place Laura Summer in the voice of Janine. Ghostbusters. And then we actually have a Transformers animated connection, Jeff Bennett. He played Dad, who we played Prowl in animated.
And there's a couple of these guys that we're going to mention that just have played so many things. Like, Jeff Bennett's one of the big ones. I mean, his credits go
yeah.
pages.
Well, let's
pages.
Just list them. No reason to talk about all of them. Jeff Bennett, Frank Welker, Rob Paulsen, Tom Kenny, those three right there are the Right.
And then you go down a little bit more for Maurice LaMarche.
Kevin Michael Richardson, Dom DeLuise, Maurice LaMarche, Randy Savage, Greg Eagles, Jim Cummings, D. Bradley Baker, Derek Norris, Robert Ridley, Mako. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of people. And I didn't even know Frank Welker has so much shit, I didn't even know he was in this show.
Yeah, he's the teacher, the monkey, and the infragable crunk.
Cool. I always thought.
So just look at the Justice Friends group, though. No wonder that was you. I haven't seen it, but you were saying that that's a good part of the show. You had Frank Welker, Rob Paulsen, and Tom Kenny doing those three. I thought it was cool, even though I haven't seen the show except for one episode. The Randy Savage that does the wrestler in this was the actual Macho Man Randy Savage, the actual one from WWF, WWE. So I thought that was kind of funny that
Randy
he was in
Savage
there.
Or Macho Man Randy Savage, whatever the hell you want to call him, he shows up in some weird places. I was shocked to see him in Spider-Man.
I got to bring up a couple other guys just because I think they have some kind of interesting things here. One of them being that Jim Cummings, who did Organ Grinder, says he had to fill in for Jeremy Irons during the song Be Prepared in The Lion King because Jeremy Irons threw out his voice after singing You Won't Get a Sniff Without Me. I thought that was kind of funny. And he's also the alternate to Shredder for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I don't think he ever had to go in there, but he was the alternate for that, which I thought was kind of a funny little aspect to that. And then the other one I want to bring up is the main title narrator, the voice actor that did that voice, I don't know if it's Mako or Mako, but he is very famous. He's been actually nominated for Oscars and Emmys, I believe. He actually was officially announced as the voice of Master Splinter in the 2007 CGI Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, but passed away one day after that announcement. So that he would have had a huge role there. He's very famous, goes way back to like the 60s in his credits. And he was also, one of his last main roles was in the Avatar, the Airbender series. So a lot,
Jim
just a
Cummings
ton of voice actors
also
in this.
Will make another appearance when we eventually review Darkwing Duck. Obviously he was Darkwing Duck.
Ah, yes.
Plenty of a character show. So I don't really. I think we're done with the voice actors.
Headed directly for Earth.
All right, we are going to move on to the behind-the-scenes segment. I do not have any behind-the-scenes audio, only because neither one of us have the DVDs.
I just go into the production a little bit. Dexter's Laboratory was inspired by one of Genndy Tartakovsky's drawings of a ballerina. After drawing her tall and thin shape, he decided to pair her with a short and blocky opposite, Dexter. In 1991, he made his first Dexter short, and on February 20, 1995, Dexter's Laboratory made its first run on the Cartoon Show. In March 1996, the first season began airing, and it ended its initial run in 1999, with the series finale being the TV movie Ego Trip, but re-entered production again in 2001. The new episodes, which ran for two more seasons, had a different production team than the originals. Since Tartakovsky was busy working on Samurai Jack and Star Wars The Clone Wars, and McFarlane and Hartman, which we'll talk about in a second, had left Time Warner altogether at this point, focusing on The Family Guy and Fairly Odd Parents, the second series featured new character and background designs, alternative storyline and character backgrounds, and different sound effects. In the United States, the show currently airs on Cartoon Network's sister channel Boomerang. It aired on Cartoon Network on June 8, 2008 on the That's Nacho Chip Marathon and aired again during the You Big Baby Marathon in 2008.
Yes. As far as the air dates, it is still running on Boomerang. It runs at 9:30 and 3:30 in the morning, 9:30 at night, 3:30 in the morning.
That is Eastern time?
Yes. All times should be Eastern.
Disagree, but go ahead.
All times should be Eastern. The series directed was Genndy Tartakovsky, who did pretty much all the episodes. Robert Renzetti, John McIntyre, and Robert Alvarez. The writing crew was again Tartakovsky. Jason Butler wrote, and wow, Seth MacFarlane. Holy crap! Wrote
the
episode. Did not know that. Jesus Christ! Where does people show up in the strangest places? Series producers by Debbie Hinman. Sherry Gunther, Larry Huber, and of course Tartakovsky again. The art was done by Seth MacFarlane and Gabe Swar. Again, neither one of us have Dexter DVDs. I would have loved to be able to put in some behind-the-scenes footage with that. But, yeah, no such luck. So I think we're going to move on. All right, it is now time for the actual show, and holy crap, I actually remembered it this time. For a cartoon that really doesn't matter when it comes to Tooncast. Anyway, the show's premise, the series revolves around a boy genius named Dexter, who has a secret laboratory, which he pronounces, yeah, laboratory, instead of the American pronunciation laboratory, filled with highly advanced equipment hidden behind a bookshelf or under a rug in his bedroom. Access to this never-ending laboratory is achieved by speaking various passwords or by activating hidden switches on the bookcase, such as pulling out a specific book. Dexter is normally in conflict with his ditzy older sister, Dee Dee, who has uncanny talent for gaining access to Dexter's lab despite his best efforts to keep her out. Dee Dee eludes all manner of security and, once inside, delights in playing in the lab. Often destroying his inventions and creations for reasons left unexplained, Dexter manages to keep the lab in secret from his clueless, cheerful parents. In the beginning of the show, Dee Dee is the only other character to know about his lab. In several episodes, however, he is forced to reveal his lab to his parents, although such episodes always end with his parents' memories being wiped. This show, as we've said before, I mean, there's tons of stuff to this show. You know, a couple of the backup segments, Island for Monkey and the Justice Friends, were probably the best part, I think, of this show. I mean, some of the episodes with Mandark, you know, are kind of cool, but overall, it's not my cup of tea. Two short segments ran in between episodes during 21-minute slots called Dialing for Monkey and The Justice Friends. These segments existed within Dexter's laboratory universe, and main characters are from either show appeared in equal episodes regularly. The episodes of the first half of Season 1 of the show included the Dialing for Monkey segment in between two Dexter shorts, and the last half of Season 1 included a Justice Friends segment in between two Dexter shorts. Monkey often appeared in the Justice Friends segments and vice versa, teaming with his fellow superheroes. The Dialing for Monkey shorts featured Dexter's lab monkey, Monkey, played by Frank Welker, who, unknown to Dexter, has superpowers and fights evil with his partners. One episode, Bakur, caused a controversy and eventually led to that episode's banishment because of its portrayal of gay stereotypes. Monkey revealed his secret to Dexter in the All-Star episode Last But Not Beast, only to erase his memories afterward. The segment's title derives from Alfred Hitchcock's Dial M for Murder and DC Comics' Dial H for Hero. You want to pick the Justice Friends thing?
Yep, the Justice Friends, as we talked about, the three characters are all roommates who live in an apartment complex. Most of the adventures of the Justice Friends deal with the three trying to balance out their superhero adventures while just trying to keep their composure living in the house. They have also appeared on at least one episode of the Powerpuff Girls, thereby tying the universes of those two shows together. Most of these adventures play out like a sitcom, along with a laugh track used in a satirical manner. The segment's title likely derives from the DC Comics superhero organization, the Justice League, obviously, and its sanitized animated cartoon version, Super Friends, though the team itself is clearly a parody of Marvel Comics' Avengers title, itself the Marvel equivalent to the Justice League. The three main characters are based on the Marvel comic characters, like we talked about, Captain America, Hulk, and Thor. And both of these segments crossed over into episodes of Dial M for Monkey. In addition to Agent Honeydew and Monkey, the three superheroes are seen in action along with additional superheroes, similar to the large amount of Justice League members in Challenge of the Super Friends. A TV series seen in the apartment of Major Glory and his pals called the Puppet Pals Show, or simply TV Puppet Pals, is seen as a few small segments with live-action puppets. One of the cartoons featuring Dom DeLuise's character, Kusala Goopagoop, has an opening similar to the two main backup segments. However, this is merely a one-off episode, and the credits run into the episode.
Yes, and as far as the trivia, there is an unaired episode called Dexter's Raid Removal, which is apparently not suitable for children and has been shown at comic conventions and in private. Oops. I thought I said Raid. Okay.
Oh. I got the second one. At the end of episode Blackfoot and Slim, Dexter is sporting an ear tag. The identification on the tag is BG 1138, an obvious reference to George Lucas's THX 1138 from 1971.
Yes, the episode Trapped with a Vengeance is a parody of Die Hard, including a scene where Dexter, wearing only an undershirt and pants, painfully walks over scattered potato chips, recreating the scene where the barefooted John McClane is forced to walk on broken glass. Okay, just only I just have to talk about that only because I'm gearing up for Die Hard this week on MWire. Holy crap, that's so wrong.
That's so wrong. 2001 episodes are stories from the Dexter's Laboratory comic book series.
In the episode...
it's backwards.
Oh, well, okay, well, in the episode Backwards, speaks backwards a few times in the show. Here are some things he says backwards in the scene, which Dexter keeps falling up and down. He says, "That was close," in reverse. And after Mom yells at Dexter about how she thought he was taking out the trash, he says, "I did backwards." And then, go ahead.
Like we talked about, Mandark's real name is Susan. The reason is that his parents are hippies and gave him the name according to the name that the wind says, also the Johnny Cash reference like we talked about before.
Amongst the scientific equipment in Mandark's front yard is the Death Star from Star Wars. Nice.
So I'm going to actually skip the next two. We've already said those. The actor who voices Mandark, Eddie Desine, looks a lot like his character in real life in War Games, which is a 1983 movie. A younger Desine looks so much like Mandark that perhaps the Dexter's Laboratory producers cast him and created the Mandark character as an allusion to War Games.
Cool. And the last one is an episode D&DD, an episode parodying the famous role-playing game Dungeons & Dragons, was changed to Sibling and Sorcery to avoid legal troubles. Again, if people go back, because by the time this episode airs, episode 3 from MWire will already have been released. But again, how are people going to sue you when you're just dropping a name or when you're doing some sort of parody, even if it isn't meant to be malicious? Go over and listen to MWire episode 3, where you know some of our trivia facts in that are about Disney changing stuff for Big Fat Liar because they were afraid they were going to get sued.
Oh, and Transformers has changed a cast of characters because of the same problems.
Yes, we know. All right, we're going to go on to the next segment. On to the musical show. Take it away.
The original music for the series was basically done by three people, Thomas Chase, Steve Rucker, and Gary Lanelli. We also had four music videos, that were made in 2002 and had occasional airings between shows on Cartoon Network. One was a mock anime video sung by They Might Be Giants called Dee Dee and Dexter. The other three were rap songs, which were released on a compilation album. First one was Back to the Lab by Prince Paul, a pop art video highlighting the walkaway sequence of a stern Dexter marching presumably back to his lab. The video consisted of various clips and animation derived from the series' later seasons. The third one was Secrets by Will.i.am. Will.i.am singing and rapping within a color-tinged record studio with Dexter bumping his head and mixing up beats on a turntable in the background. I'm sad I didn't see that. And Dexter, What's His Name by Coolio. A pseudo-live performance, essentially Coolio freestyle rapping beside Dexter on an animated stage before a large cheering crowd composed of a host of Cartoon Network characters.
Dexter's Laboratory, the hip-hop experiment. Oh, God, this cannot end well. Album featured...
This is what we needed clips of.
Yeah, by various hip-hop artists inspired by the series was released on August 20th, 2002. Track listing for the CD are as follows. Dexter's Laboratory opening theme... Secrets, Will.i.am, Dexter, what... Yeah, it's basically all the stuff we just mentioned, plus Love, According to Dexter, Fifi Dog, Sibling Rivalries, De La Soul, Mandark's Plan, YZ, and Back to the Lab, Prince Paul. This music segment has nothing to do with the actual music of the fucking show.
But it's all connected to the show, so it's worth mentioning. So those people that do like that type of music or just want, I gotta admit, it sounds like I need to go find at least a couple of songs to see what they sound like.
Good Lord. Every person that we just mentioned for the music segment needs to pay us $10 a piece.
Will.i.am, Coolio. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wonder. Never mind.
No, go ahead and say it. You're already in.
No, I was gonna say. I wonder if Will.i.am is gonna. What did he do on CNN? Teleport into the studio to do his music video. And we. Do, I guess the other thing we can mention because it's track number one. There is Dexter's Laboratory opening theme. It was not something that I would have included in my CDs because my CDs stopped in 1995. I don't even know if it would have made it anyways. But, you know, some of you might be familiar with the theme song.
Yes, majority of us are. I still have to find it. I have to go online to get it. I actually got the outro from the YouTube stuff I had seen, so. All right, we are going to move on because, yeah, the music segment for this show sucks. It is time for the Legacy segment. Take it away.
All right, I'm going to mention a couple things where you can see stuff about Dexter today and some of the reception that it got when it was on. I'm going to start with a television special that was spawned from Dexter's Laboratory called Ego Trip. It was actually produced by Hanna-Barbera, now Cartoon Network, aired in 1999, and it was actually an Annie Award-winning one-hour special that came out of Dexter's Laboratory. So that was one kind of tag-along to the success that Dexter had. We also have some video games that tied into the series for Nintendo Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advanced, one for the original Sony PlayStation, all old school stuff. I mean, if you really wanted to, I'm sure you could track them down. I can't imagine they'd be that great of games, as a lot of the games that are based on cartoon shows tend to be fairly lame. And you can let you talk about the DVD releases.
Yes, just sticking to the video games for a minute. The last one should be really talked about. Dexter, Mandark, Dee Dee, and Dexter's computer are all in the new MMORPG Fusion Fall. Fusion Fall, I first heard about it on Cartoon Network. It's basically all of their cartoon stars in one giant role-playing video game. You actually can create your own character, and you actually interact with, like, you know, Kids Next Door, people, the Powerpuff Girls, Dexter, all those people. It's actually supposed to be a really fun game. I tried it once, but I didn't get really that far. So, and on to the DVD releases. Again, like last week, we have Australia DVD releases, for fuck's sake. First season was released February 19th of last year in Australia. Contains the first 13 episodes. And then we have season 2 part 1 in Australia, the episodes 14 to 32. And then season 2 part 2, which is not... It's supposed to... the first part of season 2 is released June of this year. The second half is supposed to be released... June of last year. It's supposed to be released... in the second half of 2009, and that has episodes 33 to 52. And we can get on to the appearances in pop culture. Dexter has made a cameo appearances in The Powerpuff Girls, I Am Weasel, Time Squad, and The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. He has also been seen as a balloon in Codename Kids Next Door. A thinly disguised version of Dexter appears in the Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends episode, Eddie Munster. Or Monster. He is also in Cartoon Network's MMO Fusion Fall, appearing as a teenager and much taller. Yeah, the Dexter in the Fusion Fall game is actually, he looks like a real boy than his cartoon version.
Yeah.
The awards.
This show, I can't explain it, and I'll get into this in a little bit, but has either been nominated or won a ton of awards. We'll start with, and I didn't even know this existed, but there's the Motion Picture Sound Editors of the USA give out something called a Golden Reel Award. It was nominated 3 times for Best Sound Editing in a Television Animation for Music, 1998, 2002, and 2004. It has been nominated, it hasn't won any, but it has been nominated for 8 different Annie Awards. 2 of them were for Outstanding Achievement in a Primetime or Late Night Animated Television Program in 98 and 2000, had Outstanding Individual Achievement for Music in 98, Outstanding Individual Achievement for Voice Acting by a Female Performer in an Animated Television Production, which was Christine Cavanaugh when she did Dexter in 98, Best Animated TV Program in 97, Best Individual Achievement in Music in 97, Best Individual Achievement Production in 97, and again voice acting for Christine Cavanaugh in 97. So she was nominated twice for her role on this for an Annie Award. I said it didn't win any, but it did win one, which was Best Individual Achievement in Writing for 97. So it was very popular in 97. And then, of course, it's been nominated for one Emmy, which was – I'm sorry. I'm screwing this whole section up. Been nominated for four Emmys for Outstanding Animated Program for a program 1 hour or less, 95, 96, 97, and 98. So it has lots of nominations and one win.
And we should also mention that there's no IGN listing. For.
Oh, I got it, though. Let me explain this one. I lost all internet today for an extended period of time when I was trying to come up with the IGN because I know it's on there. And I was able to get it as the show was progressing. It came in at number 72 in the top 100.
Wait. You mean to tell me that fucking Dexter's Laboratory beat Mask?
Yeah.
That's fucking sad.
Which means that whole listing, to me, has lost all credit.
That's fucking sad.
Number 72, according to IGN. Boo hiss.
That's fucking sad.
I know this is kind of going into some of the closing remarks, but it ties along with what we're saying. I admit that I have only watched one episode before, and it was a couple hours ago. but I will say that I will never watch another episode. that's for dang sure. I'm sorry that it's not my. If you haven't seen it, it's similar to the animation style that Ren and Stimpy uses. I know that causes some strife here in our programming, but it's basically almost identical animation drawing style to Ren and Stimpy. And I just don't like that style. To me, it reminds me of something that a junior high kid that I teach could draw. Even the episode that I was doing, they had a classroom scene where they have four desks in the front row and four desks in the back row. They were so lazy with the drawing and animation that instead of even drawing in the four desks in the back, they just drew outlines and they were all solid purple. They didn't even bother to put people in them. They're like, yeah, we're not even going to go with that. I mean, it's just very simple drawing. It's very simple animating. I don't know. I guess the sound was all right and the voice acting was all right, but this show, I could rather have that half hour back. I guess I didn't see the M for Murder and the Justice Group, but maybe that would have saved it for me. But I just, to me, it's lazy and it's stuff that anybody can do, and I don't think it takes as much talent as some of the more advanced series that we will talk about or have talked about.
Yes.
There's my rant.
The Justice Friends thing, you know, Dial M for Monkey, I really could care less about. The Justice Friends thing is really what got me laughing about the show. It actually makes you think, what would Superman, Hulk, and Thor, or, you know, whatever, I mean, how would they really act living together? Or, hell, even better, how would Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, you know, act living together?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just kind of got me thinking on that. When it comes to Dexter, as far as Kevin goes, when it comes to Dexter, Ren, and Stimpy, there's nothing but this.
But I guess the difference is I can sit through Ren and Stimpy still today and at least laugh a couple times, and even though I don't necessarily like the people that were doing it, I can still like that as an adult. But this show to me was just god awful. Maybe that's because I didn't watch it as a kid and I don't have that link to it. But I would suggest a lot of things before I tried to make someone watch this show.
Again, it Cartoon Network. It did kind of launch them into being kind of, you know, mainstream popular outside of Toonami stuff.
So I wish it wouldn't have, though.
Well,
I'm just kidding. I don't like a lot of the Cartoon Network stuff.
Well, a lot of the Cartoon Network stuff now sucks anyways. All right. I think we're going to close out the show. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. The first is you can visit the www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. The second is you can stop by predicamentempire.com/CafeSpark and get all your GCRN and Transformers discussion topics there. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. Please do this. We need reviews. The fourth is you can visit earth-2.net forums and find our threads for the show under the self-promotion section. And the fifth is the email address, which is gcrntooncast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show name there is gcrntooncast. Mine is tfg1podcast. And what's your Twitter?
BossKDawg. D-A-W-G.
You actually remembered it, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish that you'll join us next time when we will be discussing what is it. Let's see.
By the power of Grayskull.
That was a very simple tease, so everybody should be able to get what next week's episode is going to be.
We're kicking it up a notch next week, folks.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
I'm going to be much more excited and emotional next week. Oh, it's my promise.
Oh, yes. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Kevin, Boss K-Dog.
In the mortal words of Optimus Prime...
Autobots, transform and robot!
And thank you for listening. Until next time.
Enter at your own peril. Pass the vaulted door where impossible things may happen that the world never seen before.
In Dexter's laboratory lives the smartest boy you've ever seen. But Dee blows his experiments to smithereens. There is gloom and doom while things go boom in Dexter's laboratory.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.